Senior Focus.
This is Alex Bonham on Senior Focus. Good afternoon. Today we'll be talking about housing. There have been a number of reports recently raising concerns about the lack of decent affordable housing for seniors, and the number of retirees is set to increase. So what senior housing is there? What is missing? And how do we fill the gap? With me today is Greer O'Donnell of the Urban Advisory. Welcome, Greer.
Kia ora.
So what is the Urban Advisory and what do you do?
Well, we are on a mission to create healthier and more equitable homes, neighbourhoods, towns and cities. And we do that in a number of ways. One of those ways is through undertaking our own research, usually around housing, can include multi-generational housing and a range of other specific topics. But we've also created the New Zealand Housing Survey, which we have out in the world at the moment, and that's doing a real deep dive into the way people currently live and how they would like to live and what their realities are more likely to be.
So is there a problem for seniors, and if so, how bad is it?
There is. Much before our research came along, it was well established that by sort of 2040, less than half of retired people will own their own home. So a side effect of that is that retirees who are renting, you know, are also considered to be twice as likely as homeowners to live in substandard housing conditions, so more likely to suffer from health complications and asthma. We also have a woeful number of options in terms of the variety of different choices people have. If you don't own your own home other than renting, we have a limited number of social housing set to get less, not increase. And we have retirement villages, which are great in many respects, but have some real disadvantages. And other than that, we have a couple of sort of in-between options, like Abbey Field, which is more of like a private flatting in style for older persons. But other than that, there's really not a huge number of different varieties to suit different lifestyles and different preferences.
The impression that I get from the outside, and I'm not quite there yet, and my parents are resisting retirement homes and staying at home, they're in their early 80s, is that the retirement villages are okay, but you need to have a home in order to get in, and you really want to choose the right home because it's maybe difficult or complicated to shift later. Would you say that's a correct understanding of that side?
Absolutely. You're looking, if you don't have equity in your own home, you're looking at a sort of entry price of maybe $300,000 to $800,000 in a retirement village, which is, you know, not something that you're going to have if you don't already own a home. And then once you've actually signed up, leaving is very difficult, if not almost impossible. And so the retirement villages, residents association and other operators and stakeholders, lawyers, supervisors, etc., are all, you know, looking into, through the retirement villages review, some of the challenges that they have around the power balance between the operator and the consumer, the tensions that are unresolved in the sort of process which people can go through to resolve some of those things, the complaint system, the interface between the village and the care facilities, and what happens when you need to move into a higher range of care, what happens when you have to leave and still continue to pay weekly payments. So, there's a whole variety of issues which are currently under the lens at the moment.
So you buy a unit in a retirement village, but you still have to pay a weekly amount, is that right?
Yes.
Right.
And you lose a component of the majority of your equity when you leave.
The majority?
When you pass away.
Right.
So it's different depending on which model and which, but you have to, because you have to pay to completely refurbish the house and return it back to a state for the next person, you're charged considerable amounts to do that.
Right. And it's not necessarily guaranteed that if you go into a retirement village that there will be a place for you in the care section?
No. So there's about, there's a significant shortfall of retirement villages. So even if everybody could afford, which they can't, we'd need about 26,000 new units for retired residents by 2033, according to a JLL report from sort of 21, so that's probably gone up. And if you want to go into a retirement village in an area where you currently live, you know, that availability decreases significantly because there's many areas where there are no retirement villages or a lack of supply. And so your ability to sort of stay where you want to is also an issue. And then whether or not you want to live independently within a retirement village or whether you need specific types of care adds another layer of, parameters which make the availability to you even less.
So if you were to be considering this as an option, what advice would you give so that people can go into it with their eyes open and know they're getting what they want?
You really need to understand the agreement. So having family members or, professionals explain to you what the options actually mean and what that's going to mean in financially. I think one of the things that we probably need to think about too is having those conversations earlier with our loved ones or older persons and understanding that you need to sort of plan for retirement in a way that perhaps we haven't had to be quite so forward thinking about it in the past. But because of the cost of living and the cost of housing being so dire, people need to actually have really open conversations with their family and whānau well in advance of needing to actually go into a retirement village. And that's where, if we had a greater variety of options, then people could have stepping stones, they could give up the family home, they could move in to something that wasn't a retirement village, might be some other kind of supported community, co-housing, cooperative housing. It might be a leasehold model where they don't need to own the land. There's a number of different ways that they could get their equity out of their home and not be fully dependent on a retirement village structure. And I think we need to start that planning process earlier. But at the moment, people stay in their family homes. They stay where they've lived because that's where their community is. And they don't want to go into a retirement village. My parents, they're in their 70s and are of that generation where they will die before they go to a retirement village. So we need to start thinking. And it's sort of like succession planning, but it needs to become more common practice, I think, that we have those options which are good, so then people want to move and are excited about that next phase instead of being reluctant and hanging on till the sort of bitter end.
So what have you found out from the housing survey, particularly from seniors, about what they would like to do? And I appreciate that not everyone wants to do the same thing, but what's the sort of the trends or that?
Yeah, so I mean, probably the most overwhelming is the maintaining health and independence. So the ability for participants to move from their homes, but stay connected to facilities and services and friends and family, and maintaining their ability to drive, having access to other transport means if they can't drive. The services that they really do need are those like grocery store, supermarket, medical facilities, recreation facilities, bowls, clubs, public transportation, spaces for socialising. One of the other obviously major concerns we've touched on is the affordability. Most of these, the sort of respondents, and we did a deep dive in Dargaville, and there's some really sort of interesting insights coming out of that small regional town in terms of the limitations available to them because they are in a not in a big city, or, you know, they don't actually have almost no option available to them. And so that's something that we're going to dig in deeper as well, is the difference between geographical areas across the country. Some of the other things that are popping up are around the housing type. So there's a tradition in Aotearoa around, you know, the freehold title, the want to own and control, you know, and we're used to larger homes with gardens. And so actually it's still people's preferences to have two or three bedroom homes. And even as they get older and be able to live with family members or have visitors or their grandchildren. And so the solution of putting retired or older persons into one-bedroom homes, which is a bit becoming a bit of a trend, especially in our social housing, and, you know, that's actually problematic. So we've also had other sort of insights from people around staying socially connected, and... Yeah, I mean, I think that probably sums them all up. There's a range of sub-themes, but that's probably the top line.
Right, interesting. So people on the whole like to stay in the area that they currently lived in, want their independence, and want maybe a little bit of extra space, maybe a little bit of access to outdoor space as well. Do you know of any sort of examples in New Zealand where this is being offered, and what does that mean?
Retirement villages do offer all of those things, and in many ways, you know, they're great if you can afford them, but so many people can't afford them, and so many people don't like the highly regulated, rules-based environment, which, you know, prevents you from having guests for more than a certain time period, or, you know, dictates when you can visit the common room and when you can't. And, you know, so there's pros and cons to retirement villages. Outside of that, I mean, Abbeyfield, as I mentioned with her, is a great little example, you know, but there's only a couple of those in Aotearoa. It's global, but it's really hard to get up and running, and it, you know, requires a lot of tenacity from a certain group of individuals. And so then the other examples really are only kind of co-housing or, I mean, Māori housing, you know, housing for kuia and kaumātua, there are some great examples around Aotearoa of situations where all of those things we mentioned before can be provided through purpose-built housing for kuia and kaumātua, and yet in the co-housing model, which by its nature has a higher level of community-based design, tends to be slightly more affordable than market renting, and provides, you know, a range of other benefits which market housing does not.
So those are available for Māori, I would imagine. Are there? Tell us more about the cooperative options. Mm. There are some, I believe, in New Zealand, and more, I think, in the UK. I think there are some senior cooperative housing units, some just for women, some for both, all genders. Mm-hmm. What do you think about them?
Yeah, so we spent some time in the UK and through Europe looking at a range of different co-housing and cooperative housing projects. And I think the thing that's important is that they're different. So a cooperative ownership structure is different from a co-housing ownership structure. And in Aotearoa, we don't necessarily have the right settings to enable cooperative housing in its purest form. So we do have examples of co-housing. We have Peterborough Cooperative in Christchurch, which is actually a hybrid because they couldn't be a pure cooperative because we don't have the kind of legislation and financial structures set up that our banks register those sorts of mortgages at this point. So we do have Dunedin co-housing projects and co-house in Auckland, and they're still standard unit titles as opposed to a cooperative ownership structure. And there's a number of differences between those things. Are they appropriate for older persons? Absolutely. the international examples, they all really lean into the fact that it's a really good model because it is a integrated community with a range of different ages. There's many examples in Europe of university students moving in with older persons and the positive impacts of having those two different demographic stages of life living together because of the mutual benefit that you get from being able to share knowledge and skill sets and being from different generations and different levels of skill across different topics. So there's lots of potential for us in Aotearoa to encourage more of those sorts of living opportunities for older persons. And some of the community housing providers provide a targeted services for older persons, but again, they're quite individualistic in their offering at this point.
I've seen some really great Kaiangaora senior flats as well, mm-hmm. actually, around Freeman's Bay and Grey Lynn. And they're sort of arranged around a sort of a courtyard, not really a courtyard. Everyone has their own gardens on the inside and garden, and it's just beautiful. So I feel like
Kaiangaora was doing lots of things around, you know, providing for the different types of housing for the different types of people. Unfortunately, we're going to see a reduction in the number of social houses available in this current government's term and beyond, probably. So yeah, the other solutions really do need to come from the industry or those working in the community housing sector outside of government or private individuals.
So what has happened at central government level around the provision of senior housing? Why are you pessimistic about them producing?
Well, I think we need to have a national housing strategy, first of all, because then it would really quantify the size and scale of the challenges, and it would identify what are the things which we need to tackle and how might we do that in a sort of a cross-party, non-politicised way, because it's a long-term challenge and flip-flopping between ideological and philosophical views about the housing market and how whether or not housing is a human right and how we should subsidise or not subsidise housing is unhelpful. So I think, number one, housing strategy, national. The second thing is probably that we need to have a good look at the different typologies and the different tenure options and decide, you know, understand the demand side more, so that we can really target the type of homes, typologies and tenure, the way in which you own it or rent it, to fit the different geographical areas. So, you know, if there's different needs in local, regional New Zealand to inner city Auckland, we kind of need to understand that more. And that's not something you could do at a national housing strategy level, but it would have to be driven. You know, and a lot of councils have housing portfolios for older persons, which they're now investigating how they can redevelop those or, you know, make more of what they currently have, but they've got limited fiscal resources, and so they're looking at partnerships. But I think before they can dive into that redevelopment is really understanding what they need and what's going to serve their communities best is really important. So that's number two. And probably the third thing is having a good look at where all the roadblocks are. So there's a number of roadblocks across kind of legislative finance and lending, land ownership, especially when we get into Māori land and the limitations around that. There's sort of awareness and acceptance of different housing tenures, and then there's other smaller kind of things like the eligibility for KiwiSaver, first-time withdrawal, and a range of it. So there's probably a bit of a review of the things that we need to tackle, and then we need to work out actually which of those things are going to be low-hanging fruit that have really big impact.
Mm. I heard that government was considering not increasing housing allowances or putting a cap on housing allowances for community providers of housing. Have I understood it correctly?
Yeah, are you talking about the contracts to fund social housing?
Yes, I believe so. But it seems to be having a bit of a chilling effect on community providers to build more units because...
Absolutely, because I think there's sort of 1,500 in the next cycle that has been confirmed or will be confirmed, and so that's a significantly less amount than what the previous government had planned. And so whilst Kāinga Ora is reducing its numbers because they're transferring funding to the community housing sector, the overall number of homes which will be funded is less. So even the community housing sectors themselves are going to be doing less development, because if they don't have the funding agreements, then it doesn't work financially, and so they can't go to the bank and get the money to do the development if they don't have the funding agreement secured. So by limiting the kind of operational funding subsidies, we're limiting the amount of supply that's going to get built.
I know a couple of generations ago it was quite common for extended families or, you know, granny to live with the nuclear family, live with their grandchildren. Do you anticipate that there'll be more of that in the future?
So interestingly, we're doing a piece of research around intergenerational, multi-generational housing, and there has been an increase. And a lot of it is actually unstructured, so it's out of need and necessity, and it's not because there's fit for purpose homes that help that way of living. It's just that there is no other option. And with the granny flat legislation, we might see more of those types of accessory dwellings, but we also need to be planning for the types of homes which actually serve multi-generational home families, because it's actually not necessarily just an independent dwelling at the back of the garden. And having that connection, but that independence, having accessible design so that, you know, there's access isn't an issue. There's a whole bunch of other things that need to be thought about to actually enable an increase in multi-generational housing, and one that's, you know, appropriate and suitable and gives people a good quality of life. So I think we will see more, and whether or not the outcomes are positive or negative because of that will depend on our kind of ability to respond to that growing increase.
Yeah, I can see how it works in some bigger houses and everyone gets on. You'd need a garden if you're going to put a sleep out into it, but there's a lot of new family housing that has very little outdoor space at all and very little space inside that could be converted. It's pretty tight, some of these family townhouses. I just wonder whether any developers are out there looking at areas that have a demographic that is moving into retirement and thinking about, I mean, maybe Simplicity could do this or something, you know, could actually design some really good senior housing that really, really is made to last, or multi-generational housing that possibly comes in chunks, like a development with three buildings, with one really focused on seniors and another one on families, so that you don't have the screaming children can be next to the other screaming children. They can babysit from each other, but they're also close, just across the garden. There are
So the developers that we interviewed for the research, many of them said that, you know, from a development feasibility perspective, those larger multi-generational homes are actually more expensive to build and they don't get the market return that they could get from other types of housing. So why would they do it when they generate, when they're, you know, driven by profit usually? Then the community housing providers who have a a greater degree of social conscience and they actually work in the space, you know, they still have to make it work as well if they're building a new product. So it's also difficult. And then mixed tenure development has all of them, all the different typologies and tenures. That's complex and there isn't a huge number of developers, profit-driven or otherwise, in New Zealand that understand how to deliver mixed tenure because you need so many different partners to make it work. You need, you know, to have social housing provider or to have affordable housing providers or social service providers that deal with older persons alongside market housing. It's just a bit more complex. And for developers in our property industry, you know, time is money and complexity takes time. So they stick to their knitting and they stick to what they know works and what makes the most money. And so even Simplicity, who are doing great stuff, you know, it's a rinse and repeat model because that's how they keep costs down. And, yep, it will be fine for some older persons, but there needs to be other solutions and no one's really putting their hand up to spearhead them because there's a cost involved and, you know, the benefits, especially the financial benefits, I just don't stack up. So we need to think about how else we might go about getting these solutions because the market's unlikely to provide us them, unless it's the retirement villages industries, which, you know, they're going gangbusters with their building programs, but that, you know, comes with the downsides, which is around, you know, the cost, the financial cost.
Well, Greer, I'm running out of time, but the New Zealand Housing Survey is still out there. It's always out there for people to fill in, isn't it? Could you just sort of give people a link to that?
Yes, I can provide. So if you go to the New Zealand Housing Survey, .co.nz, so you'll be able to fill it in. You can also find that link through the Urban Advisory's website. It's an ongoing study, so it will be open permanently, and we sort of use different tranches of the data to provide the insights. So never too late to share your views and perspectives.
It sounds like it's going to be an ongoing advocacy position, a bit of a wicked problem to try and address this one. And so I guess the advice is to start thinking about this early as you can.
Indeed.
Thank you so much, Greer. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Bye.
Bye.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
You're